I wish you could get that bird. I wish you could get this Los Angeles area ambient noise.
Yeah. I mean, it is the best.
It is, obviously. It's like traffic and sirens and that one bird.
Yep.
That's all.
It's kind of what LA ambiance is. Traffic, silence, and birds.
I'm touching you right now.
Oh my God.
Inappropriate.
I need an adult.
Hey, hi everybody. Woo! Oh, a live in-person edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. The waveform just went insane.
That's
us
the
yelling.
Start of the show?
Yeah. No, that's going to be the start of the show.
We're so disappointing
that's
to
the
everybody.
Show. This is the show. Yeah. Whatever. Brian Kilpatrick called us the first and best Rockies podcast on the internet the other day.
I think he said longest lasting, which means that we just need our Lifetime Achievement Award. We're like a compiler. We're the Omar Vizquel of Rockies podcast.
Just without the defensive prowess and like recognition with awards.
And, like, without anything at all.
Without
any kind of market
success.
Talent.
Without athleticism or talent.
Yeah.
But other than that, we're totally Omar Vizquel, man.
We don't have a country on our back.
We're like Omar Vizquel WBC manager more than we are like Omar Vizquel player, I would say.
We're like Jim Leland WBC manager.
Hey, it's working for him and we don't know how. So, yeah, actually, that's perfectly
it's
us.
It's working
for us and we don't know how.
We have no idea how.
Yeah, no, that's great. Hey, hi, welcome in. Episode number 96 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm Tyler Mond.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
And we are in person in Anthony's palatial Los Angeles estate. This is our second episode in the palatial estate. Stop touching me, you sicko. God. Hate you. If we sat together, like if we grew up together and went to school together, we'd be the kids that every teacher just wanted to stab.
We were in Grand Central Market yesterday in downtown Los Angeles getting drinks and food beforehand. And
next to a pig, by the way.
Next to a literal piglet. It was like a teacup piglet. I assume its name was Carnitas.
That a woman just brought into the bar to drink with her.
The
pig wasn't drinking.
Well, the pig might have been drinking.
Maybe he was drinking.
But we were just being our idiot selves all the time. And we wondered how people would look at us because we're kind of wearing the same clothes. Tyler's got an actual nice USA jersey on. I've got my one that I got from the Lancaster Jethawks for free. It looks like it was a hand-me-down that you were like the older brother. I was the younger brother. And you're picking on me. And I'm trying to give it back. And they're saying, look at those two special kids wearing their Make-A-Wish USA jerseys.
And you know... And you know what I've started to feel like about life lately is there's a scene in Wedding Crashers where they're sitting on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial and Vince Vaughn says something like, just a couple of young guys having a fun time. And Owen Wilson goes, we're not that young. That's kind of how I feel about life, like, in everything anymore. But, yeah, I feel like now people just see two grown adults dicking around. They're like, what is wrong with those two?
At some point, it's not okay anymore.
No.
Especially not in public.
No.
I know we've horrified Nicole.
Yeah.
In the 3 days you've been
Which,
here.
Which, thankfully, has been always in your place. Like, we've never publicly embarrassed Nicole.
No, yet. Not. Well.
Maybe on TV, where we might have been on TV last night.
There's still plenty of time.
Yeah.
And we got the wedding coming up.
We can make it happen. Oh, yeah. It's absolutely going to happen there.
Yeah.
Greg Goldstein and I are going to make sure of that, obviously.
Yeah, well, you got the verified Twitter champagne room
already
ready to go.
Yeah. Nope. We got bottle service. Bobby bottle service in that champagne room, son. Oh, my God. So, hey!
It's even harder to take in person.
Hey, hi. Episode number 96 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. The 96 Rockies team actually wasn't that bad.
No.
They weren't, you know, but they didn't make the playoffs the fall of 95. And that was the first time that I realized, like, oh, so not all my teams are going to be permanently good. And then they weren't good again for 11 years.
Yeah, but that was when the Broncos picked up the slack immediately after that.
Well, and the Avalanche, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Avalanche first, then the Broncos.
And then the Avalanche again. And then, like, 15 years off for the city of Denver as a championship-winning town. So that's
good. Hey, the Rapids won in 2010.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and the Avalanche are... Man, I'm very thankful we don't host an Avalanche podcast. God.
I feel bad for the Mile High Hockey guys, the Burgundy, Burgundy Brigade guys.
No fun.
Oh, boy.
Not great, Bob.
And listen, that's us talking. We're like, a Rockies podcast. Like, I feel so bad for that team.
Man, that terrible franchise.
If only we had to talk about a terrible franchise all the time.
Yeah. Nope, been there. We feel your pain, Avs fans. But with that, we welcome you to this live edition... This in-person edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. We are recording this on Wednesday, March 22nd. Anthony and I are just hours away from first pitch between your United States of America and the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, battling it out at Dodger Stadium in Los Angeles for the 2017 World Baseball Classic title. Anthony and I have been in both semifinal games. It's been a hell of a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Hell of a lot of fun. Last night, it looked on TV. We got home from Dodger Stadium last night. and Anthony's lovely fiance Nicole was here. The MLB Network replay of last night's game came on. It looked like they were playing in like the wet season of the Vietnam War.
Yeah,
it looked horrible on TV. And I would not even say that it was raining last night.
No, it was misting steadily the entire game, but it was never enough to make us move out of our upper deck uncovered seats.
No.
It was just enough to make you be like, I wish this was like 10 degrees like warmer.
Yeah. Like, that's about it. Like the temperature was fine.
Yeah.
It didn't even get until like the sixth or seventh inning we were like, all right, let's put jackets on.
Yeah.
And then I'm pretty sure as soon as we did, the U.S. scored the tie-breaking run. And
that is actually true.
Japan 2-1. Yeah. So we should have done it earlier. Maybe they would have scored more runs.
Definitely more jacket on than jacket off tonight.
Are we not doing phrasing anymore? Phrasing, a non-Twitter phrasing comment. Yeah. How do we segue out of that one? So, speaking of jackets and things, we're going tonight. We'll be back in our same seats.
Speaking of someone who's not jacking it right now, Nolan Arenado.
Yeah, it's been a big struggle, and as Twitter has told us today, he's now the worst player in baseball.
Like, I think he should be banished to an island.
Yeah.
Jim Leland actually might be doing that later today, just like banishing him to an island.
Yeah.
Go mingle live with the mountains where he can't bother anybody anymore.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, last night, Nolan looked rough. Yes. Nolan looked very lost last night.
0-4, 4 strikeouts, only... Like, one other time in his career, he'd 0-4, 4 strikeouts in a game.
And
like
they weren't good at bats. No. The first at bat, he went 2-2. But
3-1,
you know,
the next at bat, struck
he
out.
He looked lost a lot of those swings. And now, granted, two things. One, you're facing pitchers that you've never seen before. And when you're facing pitchers from Japan, they're throwing from a style different than what you regularly see.
Whoa, Hawk Harrelson, calm down. All right.
Typical. That is something that you have to contend with when you're a hitter going up against a pitcher that throws in a different style than what you normally see. But I think on a larger note than that, up until yesterday, Nolan did nothing but just sting the ball everywhere. Every time he hit the ball, he's been roping it places. It's just been right at people for the most part. Yeah, the home run, had a couple of hits, that's about it. But last night was the first time where you're like, ugh, gah.
But at the same time, if you're Jim Leland, you have a winner-take-all game for the World Baseball Classic title. At the very, very least, Nolan's defense is worth it enough to keep in the lineup.
Right.
And then, you know, he's going to figure out. I'm sure Leland knows he's been stinging the ball. He's not a 138 hitter or whatever he's been doing in the World Baseball Classic 3 for 26 or something along those lines. So, yeah, they're not going to start Alex Bregman because Nolan Arenado had a bad game.
No, of course not.
So... The ridiculous thing is that everyone now thinks that Nolan, the narrative on Rocky's Twitter last night, these idiots tweeting into Purple Rose saying that Nolan's so unclutch and that he can't hit well.
I like how
runners in scoring position or late in ball games. It's like every single stat says the exact opposite of Nolan Arenado.
The Rockies hot take crowd has not figured out a way to move on from how they used to bash Tulo, so now they just project the same thing onto Nolan. That's the next step for the trolls is just, we can't think of anything new. Why don't we just take all the Tulo stuff and reappropriate it to use on Nolan now? Which I guess was Cargo's thing for a while, and now it's Nolan. But, you know, it's the way of the world. He's done, from what I've heard. Nolan's done. He's probably going to retire tonight.
Tonight? You think tonight after the game?
I don't think he even goes back to Scottsdale. He'll probably just hang it up tonight.
Wow.
Be like, man, I've given a good portion of my adult life, and I'm just done.
Yeah. No, that's
how it goes now.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you had a good run. I think you hang
couple
it up.
Gold gloves, you know.
You hang it up
hang
with
it up on
dignity
top.
Intact.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. When you just figure out you can't do it anymore at 26
just
or whatever.
Barry Sanders that.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So I'm glad that the Twitter crowd has been able to point out just how done Nolan really is, and that's been good for us to see. Two things about that. One, you know, as we discussed, Nolan's been hitting the ball on the screws everywhere, so that to me suggests dude is getting ready for the season. The other thing, and Anthony and I have talked about this, but some of the side elements that come into play in the WBC, you're getting at bats in like big pressure spots and in high leverage games and in big situations and competitive environments against difficult pitchers. Nolan's seeing all that stuff, and I don't want to say he's getting a slump out of the way early, but if you can break through those early season stretches where you need to acclimate to seeing different pitching on a regular basis, the day-after-day grind of being in a starting lineup, whatever, the WBC does that at a higher level than spring training. So I'm kind of okay with this for Nolan.
Yeah, and a lot of times you're not taking any serious at-bats with any kind of pressure on them from the end of September into the beginning of April. Like, the spring, no spring training at-bat is ever a big at-bat for a guy like Nolan Arenado.
Yeah.
So, to have this ready to go, to ramp up like that, and to get those situations where you are playing for country, you're playing really to win games. In spring training, you're not playing to win games. Nobody cares. If you win, sure, but these games are all decided by ties as well.
Right.
And by players who are not going to be in the big leagues probably, if ever, and definitely not in 2 weeks. So it's, yeah, I agree. It's good to have these kind of slumps out of the way early. And the fact that he's been stinging the ball means it's not really a slump. It's,
right.
It's a slump in numbers alone,
right,
not
exactly.
An approach.
And that's, if you think that Nolan, if you had only watched last night, you would think, oh man, Nolan is out of his element right now. This is a guy who can't get it figured out. But if you've watched the entire tournament, there's no way you look at it and think, man, Nolan Arenado's struggling. Nolan is the type of guy who can go through stretches like this where the numbers aren't going to be great, but he's still that guy. He's still the Nolan Arenado who's going to go out and hit at 330 or is going to go on one of those two-week stretches where he's hitting 600 with 8 home runs. Like, he's one of those dudes who a slump looks like a slump pretty much in stats only. Last night was rough, but if you're just crushing the ball all over the yard and it's at guys, there's nothing you can do. And that's the whole, when it comes into baseball, the process over results philosophy.
Yeah.
If you're Nolan right now, you have to be pleased with the process. The results just haven't been there. Last night was rough. Everybody's going to have a rough night. He's not going to be out of the lineup tonight. No. He'll be back out there. And more than likely, and you guys are all going to mostly hear this after the game has been played, but more than likely, Nolan will go out and hit like 6 homers tonight.
Oh, I think 6.
That's how it goes in baseball.
I think 6 is a conservative number considering he's going to retire tonight,
right,
because he's so bad.
He's going to get all the homers out for the rest of his life.
Cool.
Yeah. No, it should be fun. Should be fun.
So please don't tweet at us that Nolan is bad.
Yeah. No, never.
Just direct it to at PurpleRowBK.
Yeah.
He loves that stuff.
Direct just, all of your bad tweets to at PurpleRowBK. The guy, he's like the Library of Congress, but he collects bad tweets rather than like literature.
Yes.
So, yeah, do that. Nolan's going to be fine. We haven't really seen much of Jake McGee, neither in the WBC nor on Twitter, which is disappointing.
Jake, come back to us, Jake.
But Jake McGee would be available tonight in this winner-take-all championship game against Puerto Rico. So it'd be interesting if we see Jake McGee in a high-leverage spot.
It could be interesting because Andrew Miller said he did not want to pitch on back-to-back days.
Right?
He only threw like 17 pitches last night.
Yeah, he pitches last night.
But he would be in back-to-back days. You don't want to do that. He doesn't want to do that. The Indians probably don't want him to do that so early in the season considering his postseason workload last year. So there's a very good shot Jake McGee is going to be the high-leverage lefty coming out of the bullpen tonight for Jim Leland.
Which, Jake McGee has looked really good so far. He's been throwing the ball 100 miles an hour.
Yes.
So maybe that's a good sign.
Yes.
Because it's not a Coors Field.
But then again, you know, Jim Leland also brought in sidewinding soft tosser Pat Neshek to face the burliest lefty power hitter in the Japanese lineup last night and somehow made it work.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Tim Brown of Yahoo Sports has a really good column up today about that. If you're listening to this before the WBC game gets started tonight, go find it. It's a pretty revealing look into the conversation that Pat Neshek had with Buster Posey just prior to that at bat with Setsugo at the plate, where Posey comes out and goes, "All right, I'm thinking a lot of changeups." And Pat Neshek goes, "I don't really throw changeups much to right-handers." And Posey goes, "Well, that's okay because he's a left-hander."
Oh,
and Pat Neshek said his first thought was, "I wish I would have thrown more changeups while I was getting ready." But it worked out. And the U.S. knocks off Japan 2-1 to move on to tonight. And no matter what, this is going to be fun tonight. Because the Puerto Rico fans the other night really brought it. They were loud. They had the instruments. That roster is so much fun to watch.
Yes.
This is going to be awesome. The weather's supposed to be better, and that's fantastic. But this is going to be – I mean, we've been to both semifinal games so far. We've been to WBCs in seasons past. The weather last night took away a little bit from that game just because I think had it been 75 and sunny all day, I think you're looking at something close to a sellout.
It's
not
still
a sellout.
Called 33, I think.
Yeah.
33,000.
And it was a good crowd. I mean, there were a lot of people up under the overhangs and whatever, but tonight just has the feel. Everything is now focused on this. The fact that the U.S. has finally made it to a championship game, now there's a lot of hype surrounding this.
Even if they lose, God forbid, the fact that they are here in this moment and they would be losing to a very, very good team, arguably a better team than the USA put together this year. That team, Puerto Rico,
yeah,
is unbelievably loaded.
They are loaded.
Yeah. So there's no shame in losing to a team fronted by Francisco Lindor, Carlos Correa, and Carlos Beltran, and Yadier Molina. I mean,
yeah.
So there's hardly any shame in that, but at the same time, this U.S. team they've done something that no other World Baseball Classic in the United States team has ever done, and that's get to this point. And they beat teams that they've really had trouble against in the past, in Dominican Republic, in Japan. They needed to get through Japan in 2009, didn't do it. This year, they got some help, but that's what you need to do in games like this. You need to get help and take advantage of it when a team like the Japanese gives you two errors.
Right, exactly.
That rarely ever happens.
Never happens.
So for that to happen, and even though they made the mistakes on their own, Crawford not scoring on Kinsler's single,
yeah,
and then scoring on the botched grounder to third, where he, yeah, should have been thrown out by 10 feet, you know, you'll take the luck until the talent can take over, and that's hopefully what happens tonight with Marcus Stroman on the hill. Which, by the way, read a great article today. Stroman, he was going to pitch for Puerto Rico back in 2013. He had tweeted he wanted to pitch for Puerto Rico in the last World Baseball Classic because his mom was born in Puerto Rico. So he initially thought that was what it was going to be, but in December, he decided he wanted to pitch for the United States, and he's received a lot of backlash from Puerto Rican fans who are tweeting at his mom, those very vulgar things. And so he apparently got interviewed last night saying, you know, what's it mean to you to pitch in this game? And he was just like stone face, game face on already, saying, I'm going to be ready.
Wow.
So that should be a lot of fun tonight, because we saw what they did against him the last time out. They gave up six straight singles to start the game.
Yeah.
Puerto Rico was really in it, but Stroman settled down, retired 14 in a, yeah, row at one point. So he's going to be amped up tonight. It's going to be an incredible atmosphere.
Yeah, this is going to be a ton of fun tonight. Yeah, I did notice that the night of his loss to Puerto Rico, a lot of baseball Twitter on the Latin American side, a lot of Puerto Rican people, fans of the team, athletes, minor leaguers, major leaguers from there. The common theme was kind of, even if you're playing for the U.S. team and you have this heritage, we know who you're secretly cheering for. And so, you know, and that's what's kind of fun, right, about this tournament. Last night, you and I were walking out of Dodger Stadium. There were already Puerto Rico fans there chanting Puerto Rico,
yeah,
riling up the U.S. fans. So this is going to be a ton of fun tonight. I think it's great for the tournament that Japan was in it last night. The Netherlands, a great baseball story. Obviously not a large fan contingent that would have come out two nights ago. But that was fun. They take Puerto Rico to extra innings. The thing about this Puerto Rico team, they don't feel unbeatable. The Dominican team in 2013 felt unbeatable. The Japanese, yeah, team in 2006, to a lesser extent in 2009, but still even in 2009, that team felt unbeatable. This team doesn't feel bulletproof. The U.S.
They have not been beaten yet.
Right, exactly. well, and neither had Japan going into last, true, night. But the U.S., you know, that game that they lost to Puerto Rico was a one-run game. Nolan, of all people, makes a two-base error that nets two runs for Puerto Rico. They go up 6-3. The U.S. came back and made that a 6-5 loss. So had things gone a little differently, you can see the United States winning that game. But obviously, at this stage, Marcus Stroman is going to be ready to go. That bullpen, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, you kind of know that everybody in that bullpen is going to Jim Leland and saying, I'm available. Now, it's not necessarily,
exactly how
it
works.
It's not going to be that simple. Yeah. But at least you have the options of guys who were not used last night. There's some really quality arms out there who weren't used last night. And maybe there are some organizations that are ready on March 22nd to say, yeah, this guy can go back-to-back nights. Mark Melanson only threw to two hitters last night. Maybe he's available. But either way, I mean, tonight is going to be a ton of fun. Seth Lugo is on the hill for Puerto Rico, who was, I think, like a 23rd round pick of the Mets to start his professional career. But he's been great so far in the tournament. And again, somewhat of an unknown. Obviously, the Americans are a little bit familiar with him, but not a major league arm, not a guy who they've seen regularly.
He did pitch some last year with the Mets.
Yeah, but not a regular rotation member. And especially being a guy who's in the National League with a lot of lineup members from the AL on the other side. That's the thing that I love about this tournament is you see so many guys going up against lineups that they haven't faced, lineups who haven't seen them. That's a really cool component to this. And, man, I'm so pumped.
Yeah. And I do like the fact that it's going to be these two teams because these two teams really match up well, I think. And for the U.S., it's so weird because they're on this weird beam of being both the hunter and the hunted,
yeah,
in this tournament because, yes, they're the United States. They should be the best team in baseball, especially in the world when it comes to the sport because it's their national pastime. But we've seen the rest of the world really catch up to the United States. We've seen the United States not buy in as much as other countries have.
Right.
And so they've never gotten to this point. I think it was Craig Calcaterra had a nice article on it today.
Yeah.
Where, you know, they should be the ones who are hoisting this trophy more than the zero times they had so far. So if they do end up winning it tonight, it will give a sense of validation for United States international baseball, for the fans, and say, hey, you know what? This is our time. We need to, you know, assert our dominance once again. He compared it to USA basketball.
Yeah.
In 88, they got blown out ended up getting bronze that year. And that was what precipitated the Dream Team becoming, because they lobbed professional basketball players into the Olympics. The Dream Team came about, and they just went and they just crushed the entire competition, regained their spot on the top of the world of international basketball. And Calcaterra posited that this could be something along those lines for the United States today if they are able to come and complete this run to the top of the World Baseball Classic. It would legitimize the tournament. Not that it's not legitimate right now, but it would give Americans a sense that, hey, this is our thing. We should be proud of what we just did, what we accomplished, and give more people a sense of pride in what transpired at Dodger Stadium.
You could say the same for that 2004 USA basketball team, too. And that was another point that Calcaterra had, was if you win it in 2017, then in 2021, American baseball fans have the ability to be passionate about defending a title, where it's not just we want to go out and win one. Now it's we have to defend it. 2004, that team was garbage. So for the 2008 tournament in basketball in the Olympics, then all of a sudden you see this rebuild and you see the guys buying
in. You see LeBron, you see Durant, exactly. You see all these guys going and playing as hard as they possibly can.
That, to me, could be the legacy of this, because if the U.S. wins, then all of a sudden in 2021, do you get a legitimate commitment from Mike Trout or from Bryce Harper or from, you know, Clayton Kershaw, Madison
Bumgarner?
Bryce Harper
will be 27.
Right, exactly. Mike Trout will be 28. Which is absurd. They're going to be entering their physical primes.
Yeah.
So that, I think, is a lasting legacy of this too. They obviously have to get through a very difficult team, but if the U.S. can win this game tonight, the U.S. is the last domino to fall into place with the WBC. Everywhere else around the world, this event is embraced as the greatest international baseball competition to ever exist, except for the United States, where people don't really want to care about it. I think to an extent that's an overblown narrative, because, you know, the TV ratings don't really matter in a sense, because being on MLB Network, they're never going to be massive ratings.
Yeah, you're never
going to
get a 25 share.
Right, exactly. But attendance has shattered records every single time the tournament has ever been held.
You got sellouts at Marlins Park and Petco Park.
Exactly, the largest crowd in Marlins Park history. Yeah. Petco Park was over capacity, over 100% capacity for that game against the Dominican. So this is obviously something that's catching on with people. Again, I think it's a largely loud Twitter minority that says nobody cares about the WBC. It's obvious people care about the WBC, and tonight it's going to be a boatload of fun to be there and hopefully be watching the United States raise a trophy. We start off episode number 96 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast with a little international flavor.
20 minutes of USA time.
20 minutes of baseball breakdown for the WBC. But we are going to talk a little bit about your Colorado Rockies, who are just, you know, 10 days or so away from opening day. And unfortunately, we have to start on a down note. And that is that Rockies right-hander Chad Bettis has had a recurrence of his cancer, was treated for testicular cancer over the offseason from 2016 into 2017. Felt like that had taken care of it. All indications were that his cancer was in remission. He was healthy coming into 2017, and then got some unfortunate, surprising blood work that showed that his cancer had spread. So Chad Bettis right now out indefinitely. It would surprise me if we see him in 2017. That doesn't necessarily mean that we won't.
Yeah, and that's not the most important thing.
Right, exactly. And that doesn't matter at this stage. And so Chad has started to undergo chemotherapy treatment again. And with that, from a baseball standpoint, I mean, obviously, the only thing you think about now is Chad Bettis getting healthy, and we wish Chad Bettis and his family all the best. And one of the coolest things, the Rockies, when they've tweeted out soliciting responses for people to show their support to Chad Bettis, all the major league organizations and other big leaguers who have tweeted their support for Chad Bettis is really
Anthony
cool.
Rizzo, specifically, right. He underwent cancer treatment.
John Lester, same
John
way.
John Lester, yeah.
And so that's been really cool to see. But, you know, we have to talk about baseball on this podcast, and it does open up another rotation spot for the Rockies. It looked like coming into spring training there were going to be maybe three guys fighting for that number five spot. At the start of spring training, it really felt like it was a battle between Jeff Hoffman and Herman Marquez. Kyle Freeland has certainly pitched himself into that conversation. Now there are two of those spots available. So at this stage, you got to fill those. And the guys who, you know, Herman Marquez has not looked great. Jeff Hoffman has had stretches where he's looked okay, but they haven't really blown you away. But the guys who have looked good, Kyle Freeland's looked great. Antonio Sensatella's looked really good.
Yeah, and those are the biggest surprises so far of the camp for me. It's, you know, we knew those guys had a lot of talent. Sensatella had a bit of a loss 2016, only pitched a few times, had a shoulder injury, had to come back from it. Didn't really see him much. But coming into camp, he said he was healthy, and he has proven that he's been doing all he could, I mean, to get back to where he was, and even better because he really has not pitched over double A in his career.
Right.
But now he's got a chance to legitimately break camp with the big club should they want to go that way. Should they put him, should give him that opportunity. Now, it's unlikely just because, like I said, he had barely pitched in 2016, coming off a big injury. They don't want to rush him back and give him maybe that kind of push so early on, but I actually watched him pitch of the Rockies Angels game at Tempe Diablo on Saturday, and you know that was probably his most uneven outing, but he still had a good number of strikeouts, struck out Mike Trout, struck out Albert Pujols. His stuff looked very good. Now, he's not somebody who throws 98. He's not going to blow you away in that regard, but he's got a very good feel for pitching, as they say. He's able to hit his spots very well, got a pretty good changeup, a good breaking ball, and he's been the biggest surprise because after last year, we weren't really sure what to expect from him at all.
And the Rockies noted, too, I mean, there was the shoulder injury, but also he left the team, the AA Hartford Yard Goats, in the middle of last summer. His mother was sick from cancer, passed away in Venezuela, which is another kick in the teeth. And so I got a chance to talk to Zach Wilson, the Rockies player development director, about him. And Zach's point was he is the toughest guy when he's put in positions where he needs to fight, whether it's on the mound, whether it's a personal situation. That's what you get in Antonio Sensatella. And for guys like that, coming back to baseball, that's the refuge. That's where you want to be.
Yeah, and he's shown that that's where he wants to be. And when he's back on the field, now that he's healthy again, he's proven that he belongs at the big league level, whether it's starting on April 3rd or whether it's in the middle of the season. We're going to see him. He's going to be able to contribute to this team in some major capacity, I believe, this year. But move on to Kyle Freeland. Kyle Freeland,
yeah.
How impressive has he been?
He's been great.
I mean, 2 years ago, you famously said that he would make the opening day rotation.
When we did our
first blockers panel.
Our bold prediction. Was it him? I said by the end of the year that he would be in the rotation.
I think you said he was going to win the Cy Young his rookie year.
Yeah, no, right out of college, I think is what it was. Yeah. And then people who were not down with the concept of bold predictions then held it up as if it was something that I was legitimately predicting would happen realistically. Kyle Freeland, he's pitched himself into the conversation. I think for a long time, people were waiting for Kyle Freeland to fall apart because he had the injury history in college. They weren't really sure how well his stuff was going to play at the professional level. Freeland has gotten better as he's climbed the ranks. His second half last year was fantastic for Albuquerque. And the stuff right now looks as good as it has ever looked from him. The mid-90s fastball, which can touch the upper 90s when he needs it to, that's been great. He spots his stuff well. The changeup has come along. His breaking pitches are good. For Freeland, this is his moment, I think. If he gets rewarded with a spot in the rotation out of spring training, I think it'll be a surprise. I don't think it'll be a surprise to anybody in the Rockies organization because they've seen the way that he's come along in recent seasons, especially last year with the way he grew after he was promoted from AA Hartford. That's huge. And that guy is kind of the one that I think in the discussion of who is going to break through, he's always the one that people seem to think, oh, maybe eventually Freeland goes to the bullpen. Yeah. But if Kyle Freeland is the best case scenario of Kyle Freeland, then he's a 2-3-4 type of starter. And you then can add him to John Gray, Tyler Anderson, a healthy Chad Bettis, Tyler Chatwood, Jeff Hoffman if he breaks through, Herman Marquez if he breaks through, Antonio Sensatella when he breaks through. That gives you that depth that we have talked about the Rockies having in the low to mid levels of the minors. Then it finally gets close to the major leagues, and then you're really looking at something exciting.
I mean, a first round pick, you have to make sure that they cannot start the big leagues before you shuttle them back to the bullpen.
Right.
And Freeland should be given that opportunity. And so far this spring, ERA under 2.5, struck out nearly a batter per inning so far in 4 appearances, 2 of them being starts. We look at just straight ERAs of the guys who are going to be in the Rockies rotation, or at least fighting for those spots right now. Tyler Anderson, 5 starts, 14 2/3 innings, 3.68 ERA, 13.2 K to walk ratio. Tyler Chatwood, 3.46 ERA, 4 starts, 13 innings, 12-3 K to walk ratio. John Gray, 1.42 ERA in 4 starts.
Is that good?
16-4 K to walk ratio in 12 2/3 innings. And then Sensatella, 15-1 K to walk ratio this spring. I mean, that's, you know, Freeman 2.45. Marquez and Hoffman have been a little bit less than Marquez, ERA of 8 in 9 innings. Hoffman, just a little bit under 5 in 5 2/3. But you're seeing the mentality of next man up that we saw last year with near the end of the year with,
yeah.
with Gray and Anderson and Chatwood, those guys wanting to outperform the other. And you're seeing the steps from John Gray he's making. Of course, spring training stats, a lot of time throw them out the window, don't mean anything. But the fact of the matter is these guys are pitching well and pitching well when called upon. And that's the most important thing, especially in the spring, to when you get your opportunities, your 2, 3, 4 inning outings at a time to pitch well in that time. Because most of the time, they're probably going to be facing a halfway decent lineup. So to see John Gray come in the spring, know that he had the number one job with Jorge De La Rosa being gone now. It was his team. It was going to be his rotation. To see him come in after the offseason and put together the spring he's had so far, that's the most impressive thing about John Gray, is that he had the expectations, and obviously, so far in spring training, he has wildly outperformed them.
Yeah, you know what's fun about John Gray? I feel like we skipped over the part of John Gray's career where we had to wonder publicly if he was going to be a guy who could handle the mantle of being a number one at Coors Field.
Like, his first year was, you know, he did not pitch well.
Well, at the end of his debut season, yeah. But last year and coming into this season, it's like there's been such a constant progression of him getting better and better that we haven't had to think, oh, well, man, they're going to need one of these other guys to step up. It really seems like right now he's your number one. Everybody knows he's your number one. You can go behind him every 5 days and be confident that he's going to give you more than likely an effort in which you're going to be able to get a win. That's maybe unprecedented in the history of this franchise. I don't know anybody else who's ever crossed that line, and you just kind of accept it that guy's going to be an ace. And for John Gray, I mean, right now, he's having a spring the way you see Clayton Kershaw have a spring, the way you see Madison Bumgarner have a spring, where you go out, you get your work in, you dominate, and you get ready for the next one. And that's really encouraging.
Yeah, I'm not sure we've really talked about John Gray that much this offseason because
yeah, we really have.
I think we just know what to expect from him. And I think he has taken that mantle as well. I think he knows what to expect from him. He drives himself better than anybody. So I think the fact that he was able to come in and perform the way he has, we haven't needed to talk about him. That's just more like a constant. That's like we're not talking about Nolan being good, even though he spent the first 20 minutes of the
Nolan's bad now.
Nolan being good.
Nolan's bad, according to Twitter.
Like, no, you just take it for granted that he's going to be good. Oh, Nolan's going to be fine. DJ's going to be
right.
good. Cargo's going to be good. John Gray's going to be good.
Yeah.
When was the last time we said that about a Rockies pitcher, especially one at the top of a rotation?
You have to say, we used to have to say it about Jorge De La Rosa through his first nine starts of a season where he would go 1 2/3 each time out.
I actually saw Jorge pitch on Sunday at the D-backs Indians game in Goodyear. It was weird. He looked great.
I bet.
3-3 down with a strikeout.
That's good. I hope he does great. Love Jorge De La Rosa.
It was weird to see him in a D-backs uniform. And then immediately, the next half inning, Boone Logan pitched for the Indians.
Bone Lagoon! Miss Bone so much. The Rockies, I mean, this, I'll admit, this is from a very limited sample, and it doesn't necessarily signify much, but I talked to John Gray in the Rockies clubhouse last week after their game at home in which Antonio Senzatella got the start against the Royals, and went into the clubhouse, talked to John Gray. He seems so relaxed and confident and ready to go. And this time last year, it's not that he wasn't relaxed and confident and ready to go, but there are definitely some nerves when you're in your first big league camp where you're fighting for a rotation spot. Obviously, he had the injury. That was frustrating. That was stressful. So there was a different feel. But walking up to John at his locker last week, he seemed like a dude who didn't have a care in the world. He knew he was good. He knew the spring training was going well. That's the type of stuff you want to see from a number one. And he's a number one. He's a dude now. That's so exciting.
Yeah. He's a dude with a capital D.
Yeah, exactly. So this rotation, I mean, you know 3/5 of the components right now in him and Tyler Anderson and in Tyler Chatwood. But with the Chad Bettis situation, I mean, that is – nobody could foresee that circumstance. That's the furthest thing from anybody's mind now is when is Chad Bettis going to be back on the mound. But for Chad Bettis, the thing that is really encouraging – is he's been around the facility. The other day, Jeff Hoffman was throwing in a minor league game, and watching him was Chad Bettis. And Bettis, after the game, they walked back to the clubhouse together. This isn't a story from Nick Groke. And Bettis went over what he thought would be a better approach for Hoffman in terms of mixing his pitches. And for a guy like Chad Bettis, for baseball players, the most cliche of cliches is baseball players are creatures of habit. But Similarly to what we discussed with Antonio Senzatella, that's normalcy for those guys. If Chad Bettis is going through chemo, if he's having these things that are going on outside of baseball, the refuge for you, the island in the middle of that storm, is baseball. And for him to be around, to be showing up for his teammates, to be there to show support for him, that's fantastic. And we wish Chad Bettis all the best. That's what it comes back to, is Chad Bettis, get healthy. Please, yes, get healthy, because fuck cancer. And that's a dude who, by all indications, you're never going to meet a nicer human being than Chad Bettis, or a harder worker than Chad Bettis. And you could tell just from the show of support that he's gotten from other big leaguers, you know, on social media, that the Rockies have been retweeting, that the Rockies have been posting on Instagram. That's really cool. Yeah. And that is the overriding theme for all of it, for the 2017 start to the season. Yeah, what else are we going to talk about? What else is going on?
Your quick and imminent death.
That's the blood coming out. What if it was a video podcast?
We can do that now.
That's true, we could. Maybe I'll move to Los Angeles. No, I won't move to Los Angeles.
I will move just somewhere else so quickly.
Oh, really?
Really.
Is that how this goes?
Yeah.
Do you want to make out right?
You're so weird.
We're just staring so dramatically into each other's eyes. Figured that would be the moment. That'd be our moment. No? Was it not?
Next week, we're going to have Travis Sarandos. Our final,
yeah!
Our final PDP before the 2017 regular season campaign kicks off in Milwaukee. We'll have noted Brewers fan and Matt Holliday hater Travis Sarandos, yep, on to talk about the Brew Crew, what to expect from them this year.
I'm going
to
have him defend people from Wisconsin, because I don't like
Wisconsin
or all the people from it. Travis seems like an exception, but I really, with a pretty fiery passion, I don't like much of anything Wisconsin. I also have a road trip with University of Denver Lacrosse to Marquette coming up next month. So I guess I'll ask for like burger recommendations or something. I'm not a fan.
Yeah, but next week's going to be our big season preview. Yeah. We're going to go through projected lineup, projected rotation. Hopefully some of those position battles will be done by then, make our jobs a lot easier so we don't have to make bold predictions that don't come true.
And then you get lambasted for them on Twitter for the rest of a season, which doesn't make sense after a bold prediction. My bold prediction this year, the city of Denver forces the Rockies out of Coors Field because the lease is up, and then they just have to move and they burn the ballpark down.
Just like,
it's my bold prediction.
It's a pretty bold prediction.
The lease is actually up.
So,
but I don't think that it's like an apartment in the Highlands. Like, I don't think there's other people like banging down the door to rent Coors Field.
Would they make it like, it'd be like new high or like,
maybe, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
New dough. Like Lodo, like, but this is the trendier version of Lodo.
Just
now.
Like Italian for nude. Like nudo.
Send nudes.
Send nudes.
From the French school. Next week is going to be fun. And then we're going to have actual baseball to talk about. And that's exciting. And also a little overwhelming for those of us who work in it on a daily basis. MLB Whip Around's coming back soon.
It is. Yeah, we have A-Rod back. A-Rod's going to be...
on the podcast? Is that what you were going to say?
No.
With Pete Rose?
Him and Pete Rose are doing it together.
Awesome! Yeah. This is going to be so much fun! I bet your neighbors love me right now.
Oh, yeah, they, yeah.
Screaming.
Actually, just she just walked out with her child in hand and gave us the dirtiest look.
Whoops. Sorry. Wow. Sorry.
So what I'm going to do with that now that you leave.
I'm sorry.
Who is that yelling child next door?
Were you actually stabbing someone? I can hear the blood coming out this way. Blah, blah, blah. Which is how blood sounds when it comes out, presumably.
You know.
You're weird.
You know exactly so what blood sounds.
You know. You know what I'm saying. So that's coming up next week. We're going to go. Where are we going for pre-gaming?
The Holloway Bar on Sunset, right near the Stadium Way.
You can't tailgate at Dodger Stadium.
No, you can't.
So we're in search of cool places. We went to a Mexican place the other day that was fantastic.
It was.
We thought it was a mile from Dodger Stadium. It turns out that the same restaurant, El Compadre, also has a second location 5 further miles away from Dodger Stadium. So we got out, and we were actually 6.5 miles away from Dodger Stadium.
Which,
we were
like, oh. Which okay. At 5 o'clock on an afternoon, it was not easy to navigate down Sunset Boulevard. But to be fair, who builds two of the same franchise of restaurant owned by the same people on the same street.
Yeah. You would think, like...
not like a Starbucks.
Like, open... make the front door on the side street of one of them, and then you can add the side street as your address.
It was, like, clearly owned by the same... like, family-owned, owned by the same people.
And they both serve flaming margaritas.
I think there's only two.
Which we had multiple.
And there's only two, in fact.
And they're both on Sunset.
They're both on Sunset.
The other one that we didn't go to had a cool mural of the flaming margarita on the side.
Yes.
Which was fantastic.
I probably could have stylized the picture I took with my phone and, you know, done some Photoshop with it and make it a mural.
Make it a mural.
Put it back on Insta.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Should give it a shot.
Maybe later.
You guys aren't you aren't here for the awkward looks that we give each other while recording a podcast in person. What is the name of the place? The Underwood tonight?
The bar?
Yeah.
The Holloway Bar.
The Holloway Bar.
It's the same
thing. It's the same thing. Underwood, Holloway. Maybe I was thinking Hollywood. Because that's near where we're going.
Tyler, you just don't get L.A., do you?
You're just not hip with the L.A. scene, man. I will say, yesterday, I took the train down to Santa Monica, walked around for a little bit, found a coffee shop, and did some work. And the coffee shop that I found was a place called Bulletproof Coffee. And apparently, Bulletproof is like the name of an entire like nutrition and diet fad, which I had no idea.
CrossFit?
It's like a lifestyle, quote unquote, one of those things. It is. It's like CrossFit. Okay. And so I'm like sitting there doing work. Apparently, and I'm not making this up, apparently the whole shtick for this Bulletproof diet is they put butter in like everything. So I had a latte that had some type of buttery oil component to it. And as I told Anthony, when I started drinking it, I thought to myself, this is either going to be the best or the worst latte I've ever had in my entire life. And by the end of it, I'm still not sure which one it was. And I think in the fact that I can't just settle on that it was the greatest, that I think that makes it the worst.
It definitely sounds gross.
But some dude came up to me and he was like, can I ask you a question? And I was like, yeah, sure. And he was like, do you follow this whole Bulletproof lifestyle, this whole thing? And I was like, what does that mean? And apparently,
I've never heard of this, by the way.
Yeah, it's so weird. Yeah. It's so weird. But apparently, it's like a whole thing. And when I went back inside, because I was sitting outside, when I went back inside, they have like, there's a book that outlines the Bulletproof lifestyle, and they were selling that.
This already sounds
exhausting. Other nonsense.
Yeah.
I guess it's like if the Atkins people open up a chain of coffee stores. Seems terrible.
Is Atkins still a thing?
I don't know. Okay. Look at my physical shape. Like I know what anybody does it's to like, stay in shape.
Oh yeah, baby, nothing but salad.
God knows. But so we're gonna go make ourselves more obese.
Yes,
and it's gonna be great. Okay, I guess that's all.
Second live edition of the PDP.
Yeah, it's
well,
fantastic.
Third. We had the one in Scottsdale.
Yeah, we had one in Scottsdale when Dave Stewart gave us weird looks and then didn't have a job a year later. So whose fault was that, Dave Stewart?
Hey, we still have jobs.
We do.
Dave Stewart.
We do, Dave Stewart, on this unpaid podcast. It's great. That'll do it. We're going to post this ASAP so you can tune in tonight before WBC championship action live from Dodger Stadium. As Martin Melanson's been giving out tickets on Twitter today. And we saw some very well-dressed people last night. People dressed like colonial patriots.
The American Outlaws actually showed up.
Yeah!
Saw U.S. soccer fans. Hopefully there'll be more of them tonight because the game this Friday is in San Jose.
Okay.
The big World Cup qualifier with Honduras.
Okay.
So hopefully they stick in L.A. for one day and then head up to San Jose because that was really cool because they were able to do a call and response kind of stuff with the Japanese, the trumpets
cool.
and the drums they had last night. Puerto Rico will bring in a lot of the same kind of thing. So if we can get a lot of American Outlaws there tonight doing their U.S. soccer chants, doing their drums and everything, that would be fantastic. I'm so excited for the atmosphere tonight.
It's going to be so much fun. So much fun! And we love you guys. Next week, season preview, Travis Sarandos, Milwaukee Brewers, Colorado Rockies. We'll talk to you then. Love you. Bye. Bye. We'll talk through it. Yada yada.
Yada yada ya.
Yada yada.
Yada yada.
I think there's something severely wrong with us.
There's it's very possible.